We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to another episode of Setting the Pace. And on today's show, we've got Rhett Bauer and Mark Schindler. Rhett, Mark, how are you guys?
Doing great. Can't complain. Got some actual basketball to talk about.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's we've had a lot to look at with the Pacers, but there's a ton going on league-wide, too, that I am definitely struggling to keep up with. I have been, but it's been a task, man. I always forget, like, as much as I love the league, it is so crazy trying to keep up with everything sometimes, but it's worth it. But how are you doing, Alex?
Yeah, man, I'm doing good. And like you said, it's definitely hard to keep up with it, especially during Christmas and holiday season. So I really didn't even really get a chance to watch the Pacers-Bulls game on Saturday. It was on in the background, but our family was, you know, playing games and just, you know, having time together. So didn't really get a chance to watch that, but I did get a chance to watch the big one over the Celtics. And it was really cool because this afternoon, Domantas Sabonis was named the Eastern Conference Player of the Week. And, you know, Rhett, that's pretty cool to get the first honors.
Yeah, and it was very well deserved with what he's been doing, leading the team in points, rebounds, and assists so far, hitting the game-winning shot. Just been an incredible week so far.
Yeah, and so, Mark, I gotta ask you, because it seems like Sabonis' minutes have actually upticked from last year, which I didn't even know was possible, but looks like Nate Bjorken's going to ride Domas hard. And I put a tweet out today talking about how Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet were both fourth and eighth in minutes per game last year, while Domas was 13th with under McMillan. I mean, if this trend continues where Bjorken does a lot of the same things Nick Nurse does, it wouldn't surprise me if Sabonis cracks that top five for minutes played this year.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's possible. I hadn't really thought about that. I know – I was talking to Brian Sutter earlier today. If you guys don't know who he is, he's one of the best, kind of sports medicine people out there that's involved with sports media right now. We were talking about looking at rest and load managements. And so I don't know. He played 40 minutes last night, I believe, off of back-to-back, which is kind of like just unexpected, you know, compared to, you know, what we're used to. I don't want to say that, you know, I tend to be the pessimist of the group, I'll be honest. I think that that's not going to be a trend that we continue to see. That's just my opinion. I mean, maybe we'll see it here and there, but I really think the minutes are going to fluctuate a lot once guys are getting back and healthy. Like if Goga was back yesterday, I think we would have seen some of him. When Jeremy's back, when Ed's back, you know, I think that there's going to be a little bit of a deeper rotation. We're going to see some more minutes kind of spread out. I mean, we saw like in the very first game when Tom coined it the death lineup and TJ McConnell ended up playing more minutes than Aaron, that really only happened because of how well they were playing together. Like Aaron was on track to completely blow TJ out of the water minutes played that game. but Nate ran with the bench lineup for the last 9 minutes of the game. So, yeah, I mean, I just think it's going to fluctuate a lot more, but we'll see. I mean, it's three games in, feels like we know so much, but at the same time, I think we know like very little. It's kind of wild.
So I'll say on the Sabonis minutes piece specifically for last night, no Vic and against Boston, who doesn't have a center who can handle Sabonis. It seemed very matchup driven because, and we saw it, Sabonis feasted and missed a ton of easy shots, but still ended up, you know, having a really good line. It just seemed like it was very opportunistic rather than something we're going to see moving forward to.
Yeah. Well, that's a fair point. I think, you know, for last night's game, it was really good to see so many different guys get involved. But I think the one thing that stood out the most was just the fact that the Pacers coach Nate Bjorken pulled out Miles Turner at the end of the game and had Doug McDermott out there. And I don't know if it's really a criticism or not, but I guess it was just an interesting tidbit because, I mean, Miles Turner is a blocking machine right now, and this is a very close game. And so I just felt like we don't really consider McDermott this defensive specialist by any stretch. So are there any?
He was getting cooked yesterday. It was very tough.
So why do you guys think Bjorken went ahead and went with McDermott with that five to, you know, for that last defensive stop right there?
It's a good question. I mean, I think it was either J. Michael or Scott Agnes asked him after the game. I can't remember for sure. I remember I was watching the presser, but you know, he just talked about wanting to ride with him because of what he can do offensively. So I think he was maybe weighing more on that. I did agree. I thought it was weird to continue him in there, but I mean, we've already seen that he kind of likes giving guys run once they're out there and they're hot, they're playing well. So it would be kind of weird to just like sub him out after Miles hadn't been in for 4 or 5 minutes, you know. I guess maybe that's the angle that he's coming from, but I don't know. I agree. It's kind of odd not seeing Miles close a game.
Yeah, I don't remember who talked about it again. But I think it was about switching. Now, obviously, McDermott is not a great defender, but even still, when it comes to a switching defense, it kind of makes more sense to have McDermott out there maybe than Miles. I'm not sure, but that I don't know. It didn't make a ton of sense to me either.
Yeah, and I just thought it was
so it worked.
Yeah,
genius.
And Jason Tatum actually should have been called for an offensive foul according to the last 2 minute report. And they also did miss the double dribble by Marcus Smart. So the Pacers really, you know, squeaked that one out when they could have had two calls go in their favor. So yeah, that was interesting to see. But I will say this, you know, that was probably the most exciting game of the season without a doubt. You didn't really know what to think after beating the Knicks and the Bulls. Two teams the Pacers have had great success with since Oladipo and Sabonis have been traded here. But now, you know, with that win over Boston, no Vic. Aaron Holiday gets the start, and we will probably see Victor tomorrow on Tuesday. If you're listening to this on Tuesday morning, it'll be tonight against the Celtics. So what are you guys expecting different in this series now that Victor will be back in the mix?
So before we actually get, can I tell you something that I really like? That's a small sample size trend. I tweeted this out earlier today, but is huge and has been awesome. And I think Vic is part of what's making it work. But the Pacers are currently third in defensive rebounding percentage in the NBA.
Oh, wow.
Which is a complete inverse of last year after being almost last. And in backtracking too, Boston and Chicago are both top 10 in the NBA in offensive rebound percentage right now. The Knicks are down in the bottom 10, but that shows it's not just coming because of weak competition. Like I've been noticing it. You know, I had thought previously over the first three games that they have been rebounding better. And I went and I did a kind of stats check this morning on a bunch of things, and that held up. So I'm interested to see if that continues. Especially, you know, Tristan Thompson was a little bit, I mean, he was fine, but he's, I was talking to John Corrales today, Locked On Celtics, and he's a little bit hobbled still. He's on a minutes restriction. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if they're able to with another night of game planning, whether or not they're able to attack the glass differently on Indy. But regardless, it's a really positive sign out the gates. And that, I mean, that transitions right into Vic. He's a huge part of that.
Yeah, I'm going to be interested to see what the defensive assignments look like for Boston. So with Kemba out, you know, they actually started Tice and Thompson, which makes sense to match the double big. But who is going to get Malcolm, Warren, and Vic? Like, what at what point is there going to be, like, is Smart going to take Vic or is Smart going to take Brogdon? I imagine probably not. But it's just going to be interesting to see what sort of defensive exposure we can get from them, especially when we take one of the bigs off and run with the one big, run a little bit smaller, and the Celtics have to bring one of, you know, Teague or Ojeleye or Grant Williams in. Warren was cooking those guys just constantly. So I'm interested to see what they do to react to Vic coming in instead of Aaron Holiday.
I actually wonder if they'll start Grant Williams instead, just because you could put Grant Williams on Miles Turner. Even though, you know, I think it's still not pretty. And I, you know, obviously we thoroughly enjoy Miles, and I think that there are ways that he could abuse that mismatch. But if you're going to have as much as I enjoyed that Daniel Tice as a player, and he's good, and I think
he only played 15 minutes.
Yeah, I was surprised by that.
Yep.
But yeah, so I personally think I wouldn't be super surprised if they end up starting Grant Williams, but that's just me. But yeah, it provides a lot of interesting things. And one thing that stood out to me yesterday, they had Malcolm defend Jason Tatum, which I remember talking to Tom about it. I really thought that they were going to start off with TJ on Tatum.
Mm-hmm.
The only reasoning I thought was maybe they wanted to preserve some of TJ off ball, but even then, I mean, he was expending a lot of energy having to guard Jaylen Brown. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how the Pacers match up defensively too.
Yeah. And I want to go back to your rebounding thing, because I thought TJ Warren actually was decently aggressive.
He's been attacking the glass a lot better defensively.
Yeah. I mean, I think he had 5 rebounds, and that's just something you're not used to seeing from him. And the way he got the rebounds, it wasn't, you know, just softly going up and grabbing a missed shot. No, I mean, he was in there fighting for some of those loose balls. And I thought that was, you know, something really nice to see from him, a different wrinkle to his game. But yeah, I think on the other side too, it's going to be interesting to see not only who they guard, but who guards them and how they can utilize those. And Jeff Teague yesterday, he got to the free throw line a lot, but I mean, I'm telling you what, on defense, he just had his head turning a lot. Yeah. And it's this bench that Boston has is just not very good. And the Pacers bench might be one of the best benches in the entire league.
Yeah, no question. I think, Boston is especially one of those teams that you could just, if you have a competent bench, like you said, let alone an above average bench, one of the best ones in the league, you can just destroy them in those minutes. And that's what you saw. The plus minus doesn't really show it, but who really knows what that means? The biggest surprise was probably going only 8 deep into the bench with no Vic.
Yeah.
But, you know, having an extra body, assuming they keep the same rotation, just add Vic and go 9 deep, that should make the bench even more lethal.
Yeah. Mark, are you surprised that Bjorken only played 8 players on the second night of a back-to-back?
Yeah, I've definitely been surprised by that this season.
it's weird, yeah, like a 9-man rotation.
That stood out to me every single game. We're seeing the exact same rotation from last year, granted different minutes, and they're being distributed differently. I really was under the impression that we were going to see 10 or 11 guys play every night. And I'm not going to counter it. It's 3-0 right now, so you can't really fault anything. But I am interested to see how that plays out over the course of the season. Is he just doing this because these guys are new under his system and he wants to see those lineups fresh and early and really trying to tinker with that? Or is this more of what we're going to see? You know, I don't know. That's definitely something to note. But I guess, if you look at it, none of the matchups really called for any of the deep bench guys. I mean, you could definitely argue for Keelan Martin because I think he fits pretty much anything the Pacers are doing.
Yep.
But I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how that looks moving forward.
Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit about Justin Holiday here, because this is a guy that's been playing a decent amount of minutes off the bench, but his three-point shot has not been there this season for him. He's just been struggling a little bit from behind the arc, but defensively he's been really good. So I'm curious, while we know he can make an impact on defense, last year he was such a positive from the three-point line. Do we anticipate that he'll get back to that somehow, or is it just maybe last year was just, you know, I don't know. It was just something we're not usually used to seeing. So is this Justin Holiday reverting back to his old self, you know, not being known for the three-point shooting, or is this something that – just pump the brakes, it's only 3 games into the season?
pump the brakes. It's only three games. Yep. If this is like still continuing, even if it's like 15 games in, I think then you can start being a little bit concerned. But like, I mean, we've seen shooting slumps that go pretty lengthy amounts of time.
Corey Joseph flashbacks.
You know, I just think, oh God, don't remind me. I think it'll be fine personally. I mean, Aaron isn't, I don't have his numbers in front of me, but I felt
they're
like
shooting the exact same.
Yeah, they're both shooting pretty poorly from three. I almost tweeted out yesterday, man, wait until the Holiday brothers start hitting hollow trays. And then I was like, no, I can't tweet that. That's terrible. But yeah, no, seriously. Like, I think that's another thing that has stood out that I was thinking about today. They have not shot over 33s in any of the first three games after like lighting it up just in attempts from my nephew's going crazy over there. But you know, they, it's kind of funny to see that juxtaposition a little bit, but, you know, I can't just like completely steal this as my own. I was thinking of it, but, you know, they mentioned on the low post today, it was Zach Lowe and Chris Herring about how the team is so much more active in getting to the rim. And that was something that stood out today when I was looking at the stats queries there as of today, it was either second or third in, you know, amount of attempts coming at the rim, like almost 50% of all shots are coming at the rim per cleaning the glass, which is huge, such a big difference. You know, and I think another thing that goes into that, looking at Victor right now, again, small sample size, he's shooting 67% at the rim, same as his all NBA year. That's 12 attempts, so don't read too much into it. But he's also at his lowest usage percentage, just shy of 20%. And that's in his career, that's his lowest usage percentage. So seeing him kind of becoming more of an off-ball guard, again, two games, but if we're going to see what we've seen from Vic and being more of a supercharged role player who does take some of those tougher end of shot clock shots, but really he's not forcing anything like we were seeing last year, which again, not necessarily forcing in a bad connotation, but in terms of him, you know, getting back into form, it just makes it adds a really dangerous wrinkle to the offense.
Yeah, so going into nerd corner a little bit here.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah, exactly.
We bring Rhett.
Yep, that's exactly right. So Pacers are actually 29th in the league through three games in three-point percentage at 28% total. And they're allowing 41% from three, which is 26th in the league. So if you combine those together and the fact that we're still 3-0, like those are both easily something that you'll have to fix in order to be a legit team. And that's super optimistic, especially when you think about the Pacers being first in field goals attempted. And then just the opponent rebounding percentages are just insane compared to last year, being second and fourth in offensive and defensive rebounding, just across the board. It's so different.
No, I think those are great points. Like, you guys are definitely in nerd corner because, like I said, it's been a struggle for me to even try to get a chance to watch the games, but just been so busy with everything going on. But I do think those are really glaring statistics, and the fact that we're still 3-0 is definitely a good sign. And I think a lot of that has to just go to the defense because, I mean, we kind of talked about it. You know, Miles Turner has just been a blocking machine, but, I mean, this guy is absolutely on fire protecting the rim. And I know a lot of people have been talking about it, but I really think, like, with this roster and how many shot attempts are going to be, you know, put up by Sabonis, Brogdon, you know, Warren, Oladipo, and then when McDermott comes in the game, he's been shooting the ball a lot. There's not a lot of opportunities for Turner, but I do like the way that he's, you know, taking the shots that he's getting but not forcing, but on defense has really just locked in and has been the best shot blocker in the NBA. I know it's early, but I mean, the way he's been protecting the rim, it's been incredible. And I this might be his best start on the defensive side of things that I can remember.
This is the best he's looked on the defensive end ever. And that's saying something considering he finished top five in defensive player of the year voting 2 years ago. There was a possession. Tony East clipped it before I could. Tony's too fast with clipping stuff. No, there was the possession. I was in the third quarter. I don't remember who drove on him. I think it was Jeff Teague. Miles switched on to him. I believe Teague got, you know, like halfway to the basket. Miles altered the shot, forced him to stop driving, blocked the shot. Teague picked it right back up and went back to the rim, and Miles blocked it again. I mean, he's not just protecting the rim. Like, he is altering the shot profile for offenses. There were multiple times yesterday where guys just stopped driving to the rim altogether because Miles was there. I think he looks smoother on the perimeter than he has. And he's always been a pretty solid perimeter big. Like, he's not like somebody who I want switching out on LeBron more than, you know, once a game, even though it worked last year. I don't know. I think that he just looks even more comfortable on the defensive end than he has in prior years. I don't expect him to be blocking six shots a game because that's what he's averaging right now. You know, right now, I mean, he would be all defense through three games. So pretty cool. But, you know, what stands out the most to me, I'm going on a rant, I'm sorry, but I'm coming back at all the people who have given the Miles slander that was unwarranted. No, he's not shooting well from three right now, as people have tried to point out to me, but I don't care. He's taking them. And more importantly, he's been really aggressive getting to the rim on putbacks, following drivers. And most importantly, he's not shooting any mid-range shots. Like, and it's not even that he's bad at those. Like, he's good at taking mid-range shots. He used to be like way better at them when he was a rookie, but he's not hesitating. He's not popping to the free throw line anymore. He's either getting to the rim or he's spacing out to the three-point line. And he's just confident in what he's doing. And he looks, this is the best he's ever looked in a Pacers uniform, as far as I'm concerned.
I could not agree more. And I think that it's something that you see how aggressive everybody's playing on the perimeter, because they can just throw themselves into the stands and hope that the guy drives at Miles. Like, it's just, it's crazy to think about how many shots he's blocking, but how many shots he's altering, and the percentage at the rim that he's holding opponents to. I guess somebody just tweeted it out. He's contesting 10 shots at the rim and opponents are shooting like 35%, which is by far the best in the league. He's just been incredible. And as far as offensively, like, if you want to look at his numbers and say that he's only made 1 3 or 2 threes a game, and, you know, he's only got 10 points, 9 points, 10 points, I don't care. Like, if you look at the difference, like, if you pull up, I guarantee you there's a couple plays that have been the exact same from last year to this year. Miles looks so different. He is getting the ball. He's either putting it up or putting it on the ground, going to the rim. And I could not agree more that he's looked as good now as he's ever looked. And that's even without his shot falling.
Well, and I wanted to say this too, because clearly he has a chip on his shoulder. I mean, when you're that involved in trade talks, and then people are putting out stuff saying that no team really wants you, like, whether it's true or not, I'm sure he hears that talk, and I'm sure it's really, you know, firing him up. And as far as the offensive end goes, you know, I was kind of hitting at this at the beginning, like, a couple things. Number one, they don't need him to be an offensive, you know, not presence. They need him to be that, but a powerhouse, I would say. They need him to, you know, pick his spots like he has been. But I also think Miles is a guy that he's a rhythm player. And getting these attempts in rhythm and maybe setting up a couple plays for him in a row might help him get more in a rhythm. And I feel like, you know, it's not like we've seen a lot of that. It's just been here and there. He's getting open looks, but it's in the rhythm of the offense, but he's probably not getting in a rhythm similar to like how Domas is pretty much touching the ball every time on offense. I'm sure when you're not touching the ball as often and getting as involved, it is harder to get that rhythm going. And, you know, some guys just are not wired that way, and some are. So I'm sure that Wayne Miles Stevenson. I'm sure Miles is still adjusting to that type of offense, even though he did it quite a bit last year. I'm sure it's still just a bit of an adjustment for him. But defensively, guys, I mean, this guy is on a tear, and I put it out being not facetious, but like, it's way too early to start talking about it, but he's really making a case for defensive player of the year early on in the season.
Yeah, no question. I think, I mean, you're going to hear from Utah fans that are talking about all Gobert's advanced stats, and it'll be interesting to see with a bigger sample size what Turner's advanced stats look like. But he's just so incredible to what this team's trying to do on defense. And he's the reason why we can get out there and have the third most steals in the league. Like, he's incredible.
Any final thoughts, Mark, before we move on to the next topic?
No, I'm good to move on.
Okay, cool. So I wanted to ask you guys what was something that has really stood out to you that we haven't brought up? And then whether that's good or bad, I would like to hear your thoughts on things that maybe I haven't noticed. So, Mark, I'll give you the floor. What is something that you have noticed from this team, good or bad?
Yeah, corner threes defensively. And, you know, it's funny because I think that a lot of it – I'm picking up on a lot of this stuff because this is what the Raptors did, and I watch a lot of the Raptors play. And Blake Murphy and Eric Green do fantastic stuff at The Athletic. You should read them because they – any of their stuff from last year is going to apply to the Pacers this year if they keep playing this way. The Pacers are allowing almost 10% of all opponent shots to come from the corners, which doesn't sound like a lot, but that is just about the tops in the league. So what they're doing, you know, like the principle behind that, the corners are the shortest distance that you're going to be able to close out to a shooter from three. So if you sag in to take away paint shots, which they're doing heavily, which is the complete opposite of last year after putting, you know, last year was everyone on an island funneling it to Miles. And now it's so different because if it's like, no one's on an island. They're all working in tandem and trying to drive ball handlers into the teeth of the defense, not just at Miles. So it's really sagging into the paint and forcing way tougher shots. And when you have outlet passes go to the corners, the idea is, okay, well, that's the smallest distance for a guy to have to close out. So you just take those allow guys to get those shots knowing, okay, we're going to contest really hard. We might end up fouling, but for the most part, you're hopeful that you're going to close out right. It's been working out well. Again, like Rhett mentioned, opponents are shooting 41% from three, which is a little bit odd to start.
It's also not sustainable.
It's definitely not sustainable. I really hope Peyton Pritchard doesn't get left wide open again, because that one was not – that wasn't a defensive gap. Like they actually just left him open. And I was like – I was a little bit concerned by that. I was like, oh, well, you know – if you look at his shooting numbers from college, we know not to do that. But I digress. But, yeah, no, that's something that has stood out to me, and I'm interested to see if they continue playing like that throughout the year. I'd bet they do. But it's been interesting.
Yeah, Brett, what about you?
So it's really – it's a tale of two separate three-game stretches, I feel like, from preseason to regular season, because like we talked about a little bit, is the three-point attempts in the preseason – would have set Pacers records, I think, for all three games darn near, or at least been in like top five of all games for 3 points attempted. And then the Pacers are out here only shooting 28.7 threes a game, which is still, that's like on par with a McMillan team. So that's a little bit interesting. And then the free throw rate is about the same as well. So that's just really the style of basketball. And I feel like the confidence everybody has in the coach, you guys saw it, or you, if you weren't on Twitter, you maybe didn't see it, but every post-game interview for Brogdon, McDermott, Sabonis, Turner from Boston's game talked about Bjorkgren as a coach. It was like everybody was giving him props. Yep. Like, hey, he saw this. He made adjustments. He saw that Boston was switching that screen every single time on the handoff on that final play. So – he had Warren clear all the way out. Caitlin posted the video of that earlier. And it's just to see the players buy in that hard to a coach that clearly is making adjustments, because what's been the biggest thing for every Pacers team under the Nate McMillan era, the crappy third quarters.
Yeah.
And so far the Pacers have been pretty good in the third quarter, making actual adjustments from half to half. And even though the numbers may look pretty similar between Bjorkgren and McMillan, I think it's a pretty stark difference, especially when you consider how the players are talking about the coach.
You know what's kind of weird about that? I mean this in a positive way. It's been cool seeing how positive the guys are.
Yeah.
About Nate Bjorkgren, but it's also come off in a way that is it feels awkward the way that it's coming off about
it. It's pretty aggressive.
Yeah,
like there's a lot.
It feels like very subtle shade. Like I remember I was watching Malcolm's presser the other day.
He went on for a while.
Yeah, and it just felt like, and again, I'm not trying to attribute anything to Malcolm and saying that he's like talking shit about Nate McMillan, but it's just it's definitely interesting. Definitely interesting to watch from afar.
Well, that falls in line with, I think, what was a J. Michael reporting after McMillan was fired, that there were voices in the locker room that were not happy with McMillan's coaching style. And it really seems like Brogdon would have been that voice, especially when you consider how strongly he's talking about Bjorkgren.
Oh, I agree with that. And I think a lot of it just comes back to the relationship that Brogdon has with the front office. You know, to me, it just seems like if he was that adamant about, you know, wanting a change, I can see why Kevin Pritchard felt like, hey, I need to make that change. But not saying Brogdon influenced it, but it wouldn't surprise me if he did. So I want to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to preview game number two versus Celtics. I do enjoy these series. It is kind of fun to see the teams play back-to-back, and I think it could actually intensify some rivalries, which I think the NBA desperately needs again. But let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about that, and I do want to talk about the game-winning shot from Sabonis and just that last little bit of the game there and how cool it was to see Domas make that shot and where the Pacers got that play from. So we'll be right back to talk about that. Okay, we're back, and I want to give the floor to Mark here to talk about that game-winning play from Domantas Sabonis. So kind of walk us through what happened there, Mark.
Well, it was pretty beautiful. It was just really well drawn up. It was out of obviously out of timeout from the sideline. Caitlin Cooper posted, as always, Caitlin posts some great stuff. She posted a video showing of how wide TJ Warren went to just expand and spread out the court. Obviously Domas gets the ball at the top of the arc, going left, going into a DHL and fakes the DHL and takes it himself to the rim. Time Lord gets stopped by time himself, is too late to catch up, and Domas just gets in for the attempt. I mean, it was really well drawn up, and what's been impressive too. I mean, we saw time and time again, I think there are two or three separate times in the third and fourth quarter when Domas just absolutely baked Tristan Thompson to the rim, did that like little hesitation into a spin move towards the rim. It feels like his handle's a little bit improved, but yeah, I'm elaborating a little bit too much. Yeah, no, the final play was fantastic. Extremely well drawn up. They'd been abusing that DHO all game with Malcolm Brogdon. So they used his gravity to get Domas a super easy basket, and it worked incredibly well.
Yeah, Red, did you have any other thoughts to throw in there on that last play?
I was just glad to see an out-of-bounds play executed properly at the end of the game, because when TJ Warren got that ball stolen, it was just flashbacks every Celtics out-of-bounds play over the last two or three years when the game on the line, where it just seemed like the Pacers would throw it away. Yeah. But, yeah, as far as the play itself, I mean, that's just something – like a coach seeing that is such an encouraging sign, because, you know, there's making adjustments, and then there's making or seeing an adjustment that is to be made and keeping it for the right moment. Because I think, I don't remember who said it, but it was after the post game. It was Bjorkgren noticed that trend on the dribble handoff where they would end up switching it like early in the game, like second quarter or something like that was what they said. And he just kept that note in the back of his head and whipped it out for the final play. Just love seeing stuff like that.
Now that is really cool. And I do want to bring up a little bit, because I know, Rhett, we talked about it off air, but you know, Sabonis does get that shot and he's flexing, and it looks great to see him, you know, just super excited. But then he doesn't convert on the free throw.
Yeah.
And there was a play before that where he got fouled and missed both free throws, I believe, or went one for two. I can't even remember.
But yeah, it was one of two.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's one of those things where I'm not going to get too mad at Domas, because clearly he was Eastern Conference Player of the Week for a reason. But getting to the free throw line more is definitely going to mean he's going to have to get a little bit better at converting on those free throw attempts.
Yeah. So right now he's shooting almost 9 free throw attempts a game, which is almost double what he shot last year. But he also shot 72% last year, and he's shooting 58% right now. So I definitely – it's something that he needs to improve on, but it also could just be, you know, just a poor free throw shooting stretch. Like if he goes the next 3 games and he's still shooting under 60% from the free throw line, then that's a huge problem. But – you know, I imagine if you just look at the next 3 games, he'll probably be up close to that 70% mark, which is still not great. You want to obviously want him to be better, but he's never been that great of a free throw shooter in his career. So it's if he's getting to the line that many and still hitting 70% or whatever, that's still an improvement.
All right. Well, let's move on to tonight's game against the Boston Celtics. So Mark, what is something you're looking forward to for this game after seeing what you saw on Sunday night?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the first thing that I would mention is Vic's going to be back. How does that change? We mentioned this earlier. How does that change defensive assignments on both sides? How does that change the flow of the offense a little bit? Is he going to be in kind of the same capacity that we've seen in the first two games that he was in? Because if so, then awesome. Like, I think that just adds a whole other wrinkle. Because Malcolm, I mean, as much as we just talked about Domas on offense and Miles on defense, I mean, Malcolm was huge offensively for getting to the rim and collapsing the Celtics defense. I'm interested to see how Vic factors into that. And also, again, if Malcolm can do it again, because the way that he has come out playing extremely well. He's shooting really well from three again. His off-dribble game looks way better. He's still shooting not very well at the rim, which I'm hoping will turn around, but that was a trend.
I just don't see that. I don't see it. Yeah.
No, I know. It's probably not going to change, but I'm, you know,
small he doesn't play size. He doesn't play above the rim enough for me for how big he is.
No, that's a good point.
That's how I kind of view him. Like, I've said it last year a lot. I see Kyle Lowry and how well he gets his body into the defender and gets to the free throw line. Like, I feel like Malcolm could do more of that. But for some reason, Mark, I don't understand why. Like, it's like you see him on fast breaks get above the rim and dunk it, but most of the time it's like he barely gets it to the rim and he's going reverse or trying to use rim for protection. So,
he can leap. I mean, he's mostly a 1 foot leaper when it comes to dunks. He's mostly a 2 foot leaper, what I'm talking about. But I mean, he's not really a great vertical athlete. So I'm not. I think a lot of Kyle Lowry, he's great at leveraging. I mean, Malcolm's weight is more predominantly, you know, his center of mass is definitely higher up than Kyle. So that would have an impact on how it's not even that he's not physical. Like, he's physical, but I don't think he has quite the ability to just get into a guy and then finish at the rim well still. But I agree. I mean, I wish that he could get up more above the rim. But I'm hopeful that things will just even out so that instead of shooting 51 or 52% at the rim, he's shooting like 56 or 58, which still isn't great, but it's better than, you know, being bottom 10% among combo guards.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Rhett, something you're looking forward to tomorrow's game?
I'm looking for an improvement in three-point percentage, both on the Pacers side of things to shoot better than their 30 or 28% on the season and on the Celtics. A decline from the 41% they've been allowing so far this year, just because, you know, it's pretty much live by the three, die by the three. And it's surprising that the Pacers have shot so poorly yet still won three games in a row. But then also just what Vic does in a lineup, like against a good team, because, you know, it's the Knicks and it's the Bulls. That's just not a super great sample size. Like, we know that he's not going to shoot 67% from three for the year. So I'm just really interested to see what he's going to look like going against a good lineup.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm excited to see Vic too. And I think from the Celtics standpoint, I'm kind of interested to see what Brad Stevens does differently in his adjustments, because one thing I did notice is they were trying to make Domas work really hard for all of the shots. They were sending over extra help when there was mismatches in the post and stuff like that. And I do recall the one play that I recall in my mind from that game is somebody left McDermott to go over help Sabonis. And it was a skip pass that got McDermott a wide open three in the corner. And I think he hit it, if I recall right. But it's just stuff like that. I mean, the Pacers have to continue to make the right plays if they're going to put so much focal point on slowing down Sabonis. And that's why I think Brogdon was so spectacular in Sunday's game. Now you got Vic, who's going to have an opportunity to get more, more looks if they're so keyed in on Sabonis. And then I'm also curious to see how Miles plays once again. You know, how do they go at him on the defensive end? Do they continue to attack him, knowing how good of a shot blocker he is? Or are they going to, you know, try to change that up as well? So, I mean, there's a lot of different things I'm looking forward to. But overall, I just want to see if the Pacers can, you know, handle business at home, even though it's no fans, but kind of punch their ticket a little bit, show the NBA like, hey, you know, we're a little bit better than you guys thought we were. And Boston, you know, we're not afraid of you. Even though Boston's not fully healthy, this is a good opportunity for the Pacers to go 2-0 against the Celtics.
Yeah, and not only that, but if they win this game and they go 4-0, it's like, not to look ahead too much because that gets you in trouble, but they have a chance to go 6-0. Like, I know that they still have the 3-0 Cavs ahead of them, but I'm not super worried about that matchup. And then they got the Knicks again. So, like, this is a very strong start to the season that could just roll over into a bunch of other wins moving forward against some teams that aren't that great.
Banking some wins early is huge.
Exactly.
You know, we saw, like, even last year, you start off 0-3, and it takes a while to get back up the standings. So I think, you know, cashing these wins early, getting some confidence early is huge.
Especially with COVID, you don't know who's going to miss time.
Yeah.
No, and I also think, like, everybody kind of talked about it on their pods that I heard. Pacers could get off to a slow start. Well,
I was one of the people pioneering that, I'll be honest. I will say it too. I still think it's possible. It's been a nice 3-game start, but I don't want to get our expectations too high going in early, even though we just spent this.
So they're not going 72-0?
No.
It's still a possibility. But I will say this. I think that them getting these three wins, though, will definitely give them more confidence. I think had they started to lose a little bit, that could have caused some trickle-down effects maybe if the guys were, like, not believing in the coach maybe a little bit. Victor was frustrated with his role. Same with Turner. But I think with them getting off to a hot start, of course things can change, but I think getting off to a hot start – you guys talked about it, how much they were just raving about Bjorkgren. If he can continue to gain that trust with these guys, I don't really see where, you know, they could fall down to about a 500 maybe later in the month or in January. But I just feel like building up this positivity, building this foundation is key for a coach that's first-time coach, let alone a guy that's trying to, you know, get all these guys to gel and play together. And yes, they have played together before, but our starters still, this is their first significant time together and they've looked really good.
Yeah. It's really interesting to think about what the team may have thought about itself. If you go back and they're like 1-2, it's like, oh, it's like, what's Bjorkgren doing? You know, like, you could just easily hear the narrative, especially from the national media who may not be watching the game super close. But yeah, I'm glad we don't have to worry about that. Definitely not getting our hopes up too high. Obviously, we're not going to be 72-0 and they're just going to be losing some games. But yeah, the adjustments going forward is really what's going to tell us what Bjorkgren's all about.
Yeah, and we'll get a chance to see that, and maybe we'll get to see some more boxing one with TJ McConnell and Jason Tatum.
Oh, please no.
I'm fine. If we never see – yeah, I – though there, that's – it's interesting because, I mean, things work. Jason Tatum, as good as he played yesterday, did not have a great game. I mean, nope. His stat line was good. But something that's been weird with him this year, he's really not been as good driving to the rim as he had been down the stretch last year. I mean, his first free throw attempts of the season came against the Pacers last night. So that's a little – I don't want to say concerning. Again, it's small sample size. Beginning of the year, it's different because they don't have Gordon Hayward and Kemba's out as well. So they're relying on a lot for him. But, I mean, they really weren't in a flow offensively yesterday. It ended up being a lot of my turn, your turn with him and Jaylen Brown, and it just wasn't pretty. Obviously, you have – him taking the step back three and missing in one of the final possessions that would have put them up. Part of it's credit to the Pacers for having the defense that is so aggressive in the driving lanes now. But at the same time, I think it is a little bit of the Celtics making mistakes and just turning the ball over a lot. So it'll be interesting to see if they can clean some of that up tomorrow and how the Pacers kind of draw some counters with that. But again, I think it's going to be difficult to play allow TJ McConnell to switch on to Jason Tatum much, because that happened a lot in the first game. Yeah. I was frankly kind of surprised with how often that happened.
I've just been surprised at how well McConnell's played compared to how he played in the bubble and in preseason. You know, McConnell actually looks rejuvenated. I don't know if, you know, he's a regular season guy. I want to see it in the playoffs. And of course, you know, we could see him play differently with Bjorkgren, but I was a little bit worried about how he would fit in, but really, I feel like he's been a huge spark off the bench.
I mean, all-time NBA leader in inbounds passes stolen. So,
yeah, that was shout out Dave. Yeah, that was funny as hell.
Yeah, and Chris Herring actually messaged him back, which is hilarious. So that even makes it funnier. But It's hilarious how just how pesky he is. It's just McConnell is so much fun to watch. Like if you're trying to get some energy in the regular season, like I know fans love him because he's just all heart all the time. And while his limitations are there with his talent, it's just you like watching guys that just do the dirty work and work hard and, you know, just, you know, have to make up for their lack of talent in other areas. And that's why I think McConnell is easy to relate to. But overall, you know, I want to continue to see this team get better at converting on threes, like you said, Rhett, continue to get to the free throw line and convert on those free throw attempts and just keep playing that team defense, because I think the new defensive scheme and system has been a nice spark, even though there are some holes in it and it's not been perfect. I do kind of like what I'm seeing compared to last year.
Yeah, no question. It's the swiping defense. I'm a big fan of it. I think they've done a little bit better on their closeouts too, not jumping out it and like going into the stands, but yeah, no, I'm really excited about this team.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot there to like. I'm interested to see how they start to change things moving forward. But honestly, it's cool seeing the way that it's developed. And we're kind of seeing this team come to fruition a little bit in ways that we'd frankly, you know, hoped about leading into the bubble last year and during the season last year before COVID had even happened, when we're wondering, okay, well, what does this team look like when Vic's back and when they're fully healthy? And again, it's only been three games that we're seeing positive signs of what the Pacers can be.
Yeah, this is like best case scenario for Bjorkman, right? Like, is there a better start to the season for this team?
I can't envision one.
I don't really think for Warren to miss or not miss, but to not play well, and for Miles to not shoot well, but for everybody else to still be doing relatively well in their roles outside of Justin and Aaron making two threes total, like, and to still be winning and playing together. It's a huge, huge win for Bjorkman and the front office for making that change. That was kind of frowned upon.
Yeah, no, I'm excited about it. So I do want to kind of transition here, because we do want to talk a little bit of NBA on this podcast and not just keep it completely Pacers-centric, but we do want to talk mostly Pacers because we know the majority of you fans want to hear about that. But I thought it would be cool maybe every week if we could do a little NBA corner. And I'll start with you, Mark. Is there anything as far as other teams that have stuck out to you? I haven't been able to watch much basketball. I just saw that the Clippers were down by 50 at halftime. Got to see a little bit of that, and I got to see a little bit of the Hornets Nets game that was going on last night towards the end. So any other things going on?
Yeah, I mean, what isn't going on, right? Basically, this week, all of the big teams lost a game in weird fashion. The Bucks got blown out by the Knicks yesterday. The Mavs, the Clippers, just clips gun clip, as my Lakers friends would say. You know, it's been odd seeing some of the things play out the way they have. I mean, right now, at the top of the Eastern Conference standings is Indiana, Atlanta, and Cleveland.
Orlando.
Orlando, too. And actually, Orlando is good. Orlando has looked really nice. Cleveland has actually been pretty good, too. I was higher on them than most people were going into the season. I don't think they're going to be they could be a feisty, like, play-in team. I don't think they're going to be, like, 15 seed, like some people maybe thought. Golden State is probably the biggest thing that you'd have to point out. I mean, Golden State has been way worse.
Holy cow.
Kelly Oubre has not hit a shot yet that was that hasn't been a dunk. I believe he's 7 for 39 from the field. I think that's going to change personally. I like Kelly Oubre a lot as a player. You and I both, Rhett. It's interesting. They're a really funny microcosm of how the NBA is, or just sports in general, you know. So I think there was this kind of reductive view that, oh, you get guys who can shoot threes and are athletic, so that's going to make the Warriors even better, right? Well, I mean, so much that gets lost in translation about what made the Warriors great when they were at their peak is not just that they had KD, Steph, and Clay and Dre. I mean, those guys, obviously, that's what made them win titles, but what helped them have like a 73-win season is having Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston, David West, like guys come off the bench who were instrumental veterans with incredible in-game IQ. Just all of those guys are plus passers. They move the ball well. Even if they're not great shooters, they're able to handle the ball. Like Sean Livingston's a great secondary ball handler, even if he's not a shooter. They don't have that. I mean, Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre both finished like bottom 5% among wings last year in terms of like every kind of playmaking statistic and analytic stat you can look at, which is not good. So you go from having all these guys who are really, and it, when I say IQ, I mean basketball IQ, like making the right plays and decision-making. It's not about a guy being smart or stupid. I don't like that idea. But it just in terms of like overall feel for the game and, you know, knowing your role and that kind of thing, it's not there with Golden State. So I'm interested to see if they start to try and maybe simplify what they're doing or tailoring it more to the players that they have. Because right now, like if they continue like this, I mean, they're in the lottery again. And I don't think it's not Steph's fault. I mean, that team is just bad. So,
yeah,
but we'll see.
Brett?
Man, there's so many NBA storylines right now going on. I think for me, it's probably that I think Milwaukee might surrender the number one seed.
I don't know about that yet.
I don't know, obviously.
Pacers.
Yeah, Cleveland, Orlando, Atlanta, take your pick. No, but I just think they're trying so many different things. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah. No, I agree.
They're doing so many different things, and one of those things is including Frank Ntilikina and Elfrid Payton going like 7 of 7 from three. So maybe do something differently with that. But I just think there's something to be said for trying things in the regular season that may not work, especially when you have like zero continuity between the roster. I shouldn't say zero, very little continuity, because outside of Giannis, Middleton, Lopez.
Yeah, they're so different.
No, it's incredibly different. Like, you know, it's you don't have Bledsoe, you don't have Hill, you don't have Ilyasova, you don't have, you know, all these other guys. And I think that's a huge change. And maybe they'll turn it around. And obviously Bud is a great coach, and at a certain point that talent just overrules everything else. So they'll probably end up still being really, really good. But I'm just really glad to see that they're trying different things rather than, you know, just doing what they did, putting Drew in Bledsoe's role and hoping that that's enough.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to go back a little bit to last week when we talked about some players and stuff, and you guys brought up Markelle Fultz, and yes, looking sir. At his stat line over the last three games, he's been pretty impressive.
Yeah. I'm a big Markelle.
I'm a believer.
Yeah. Yes. And you have the recording so that it was before any of these games happened. So I'm not hopping on the bandwagon. I'm like close to the front of it, but no, I think, Orlando is just an interesting team. Aaron Gordon's looked pretty decent. Vooch is obviously going to do Vooch.
He unlocked his game by growing out the fro.
Exactly.
Actually, another team that I would say to look out for that I've been watching, kind of from the sidelines, the Spurs. They're fun. I don't think they're going to be great this year. Like, I'm not expecting them to be like a 4 seed or something, but I wouldn't be surprised if they sneak into the playoffs if they keep playing the way that they have been. Keldon Johnson has been awesome. Yes. I love Keldon Johnson. Part of it's because he was like the guy I really wanted the Pacers to draft instead of Goga. I'm still psyched that the Pacers got Goga. I think he's a great talent. But Keldon Johnson is good. I mean, he was guarding Zion Williamson to start the game yesterday and actually did pretty well. He's showing a lot offensively. He's just a really quality player already. I mean, they just have a really fun group of guys. Like, I don't know how they all fit together, but they have something fun going in San Antonio that isn't it's a very different brand of basketball than they've been playing the last, you know, 2 decades. So
that is definitely interesting. I mean, San Antonio is a team that I really don't think to watch too much, just because there's not like
that's how they get you.
Yeah,
that's,
I know. Yep,
that's
they're
it.
They're like the Pacers West in a sense, you know.
They're close to the top for my league pass power rankings. Are they? Just because, I mean, yeah, Derek White's not playing right now. He had a toe injury, but he'll be back. Jonathan Murray's looked good. You know, Devin Vassell has been really good already as a rookie.
I liked him a lot in the draft.
Yeah. No, they have a good group.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to get more into the NBA corner a little bit. Maybe I can get some more in this week. I have a couple days off here this coming week, so maybe I can get into some of that. But yeah, I don't have too much to share on this end of it. I will say this though: I think the Chicago Bulls are a lot worse than I thought they might be.
Why is that every single year?
I think it might change around though. I think
it's early. Yeah, exactly.
It's early. Wendell Carter actually looked like he played basketball yesterday. He had a really good game yesterday. I thought he was better against the Pacers too, at least in the beginning, but his first game was really bad. And part of it's just, I love Wendell. I liked him better than Marvin Bagley coming out of Duke anyways. Just because I way over prioritize role players, but no, I just really like Wendell. But no, I think the Bulls still have the makings to be a solid team this year. I mean, remember, the Pacers looked awful the first three games last year. So I'm trying not to draw too tight of conclusions on guys.
Yeah, but I mean, I just, when I look at the roster difference, I mean, the Pacers were projected to make the playoffs. Chicago's not. I just, you know, Billy Donovan's a guy that I like as a coach. And I know that they're Patrick, was it Williams? Is that the guy they drafted?
Yeah,
Patrick Williams. So they're starting him. They're very young. Kobe White starting a point guard this year with, you know, to be honest with me, it's like their bench almost seems to be a little bit more competent just because they got more veterans, more of a flow to what they do. And I feel like their starters are just kind of like, it's kind of hard to figure them out. But Chicago, I mean, they're just a team like I think everybody wants them to be good. Everybody talks about how good their young talent is, but it just doesn't seem to fit well together, or at least it hasn't. It hasn't really come together with Markkanen and Carter and you know, good grief, what's the point guard's name? I'm blanking right now.
LaVine, Kobe White.
Kobe White, yeah. And Zach LaVine, obviously, is a guy that, you know, pretty good basketball player. So, I mean, they have talent, but it's just like overall, like I want to see them. I feel like they're better than what they are. But it's tough. And Cleveland's another team that's exciting as well. Seeing them in the preseason, even though it was just preseason, I like their young talent.
Yeah. No, Darius Garland's been awesome. So there's that. Isaac Okoro, I believe – I don't know if he's going to end up missing the Pacers game because that's still some time away. But he is out, I believe, right now.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Love, too.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting to look forward to. In terms of funny things around the league, the picture of Terrence Ross that came out yesterday, fantastic. other thing, Thomas Bryant dunking on his own rim was great as well, that. Coming up for the defensive rebound. We have the meme team is back. I love it. There's always one or two of those moments a night that just like make you laugh like crazy.
The Terry Rozier post was pretty funny, too, of him dunking on KD, but KD
– Who would have thought Terry Rozier would be the first person to score 40 points in the NBA this season? Not me. That's
not Terry Rozier's family. Yeah, that's just
– Not Terry Rozier.
Oh, no. Okay. Actually, I would bet Terry Rozier would have said he's the first guy.
That's probably true.
Go ahead, Rhett.
Speaking of meme team, JaVale McGee, three-point sniper now.
Also, yeah, JaVale McGee, coast-to-coast star. Drove coast-to-coast and dunked it. Like, oh, my God. And Domas with the half-court spin yesterday that resulted in a turnover. But it wasn't a turnover at the half-court spin, so you can't fault it. But, yeah, it was man, we're back.
Just a lot of things, yep.
Well, it's good. It's good to be on the winning side, and it's good to have Pacers basketball back in our lives. So, thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of Setting the Pace. You can find us on Twitter at SettingThePace3. You can find me at AlexGoldenNBA, Mark at MSchindlerNBA, and Rhett, is it just Rhett_Bauer?
Yes, it is.
All right. I've got it memorized, so doing pretty well. we'll be back next Monday to recap everything that's been going on and get you guys set up for next week. But hope you guys enjoy Nerd Corner, NBA Corner, and all things Pacers. So hope you all have a great day. We'll talk to you later.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.